I'm David Schreiner Kahn, and this is Smashing the Plateau. No matter how successful you are, there's probably at least one area where roadblocks are keeping you from fully achieving your goals. Fortunately, you've come to the right place. Every expert I interview on this podcast is different, but they all have one thing in common. They know how to fix problems that keep people stuck. Today, I'm pleased to welcome Lisa Peskin. Lisa is the founder and CEO of Business Development University, a results-driven sales and sales management training, coaching, and consulting company. Lisa has more than 30 years of experience in sales performance and management. Throughout her career, she has developed an award-winning reputation as a motivational and results-oriented sales professional. After a successful career as Vice President of Sales for ADP, Lisa launched her own sales training, consulting, and coaching business in 2003. Since then, Lisa has helped thousands of selling and non-selling professionals dramatically improve their business development efforts and results through training, just-in-time support, and programs designed to maximize opportunities and drive ROI. Lisa received a bachelor's degree in psychology from Pennsylvania State University and an MBA in marketing from Temple University. She resides in Upper Dublin, Pennsylvania, and is married with two children. Lisa, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
I wonder if we could start off by talking a little bit about the concept of business plateau. And you and I were chatting a little bit about it before we started recording. What do you think are some of the important ingredients to smash a plateau in business and in life?
Well, again, thank you for the opportunity to be here. And it was interesting in our pre-conversation when we were talking about the true definition of a plateau. When I was preparing for this podcast, I was looking at the definition. It talked about an area of relatively high ground or a state of little or no change following a period of activity or progress. And with both myself and the people that we've been able to work with and help throughout the years, when I look at a plateau, it really does define itself differently for different individuals. Some are doing the activities that they need to do but aren't achieving the results, and others have achieved a certain level of success, and then they've hit a point where they're having trouble getting to the next level. And so when we work with individuals, it's really trying to understand what we call those triage areas, what those areas that if improved upon will have the biggest impact on performance. Because as we know, if we continue doing the same thing over and over, the definition of insanity, we'll get similar results. And oftentimes, plateaus happen for different reasons. Sometimes people get away from doing the things that have made them successful in the past. Sometimes people plateau because they're not doing what they need to be doing. And some people just, it's the psychology behind it. And I think I always say success in sales is 50% attitude and motivation, but I'm not sure if that should be just sales. It really is truly any area. It's really truly what's between your ears and your motivation level. And oftentimes when we hit plateaus and frustration and fear sets in, well, then there's a certain dynamic, and not only do they have to get through and get to the next level by changing certain activities or process, but they also have to change the way they look at things.
So let's actually start with your own personal experience, because I think it's, you and I spoke a little bit about your story beforehand, and I think it's really, it's emblematic of what people typically go through when they are at a plateau for any of the reasons that you've described. How did you get past those plateaus in your life?
Well, thank you for asking. And a lot of the times when I've been able to help other individuals, it's because I have experienced certain challenges myself throughout my career. And as I mentioned to you in the past, I started my career not knowing exactly what I wanted to do. But my father, who was my hero, gave me three pieces of advice as a little girl. The first, follow your passion. The second, don't count on your husband to make your money. And the third, if you can be your own boss, because he had worked for a company 27 years, and in the 70s, they fired all the top management and hired people for a lot less money. Well, I took his three words of wisdom and decided to be a doctor because I knew I loved helping individuals. And after 2 years of pre-med up at Penn State, I realized that science was not the direction I should take. Finished with a psychology degree, not too far you could get with that. And I actually decided to go on for my MBA, and I did that at Temple. And the great thing is between Temple and Penn State, we're doing really great in the football area. But here at Temple, I was really, really shy. And doing a podcast or speaking in front of a group of people was a big fear of mine. And at the time, the president of the MBA Association position was open. And I decided to run for that position, knowing that if I did win, I'd have to talk in front of the 12 members that they currently had. I won, and by the time I was done, I had over 150 members. And that was truly a turning point for me, because I put myself in a position where I went completely out of my comfort zone. But by doing that, I went and expanded my uncomfortable zone, which expanded my fear zone. And by conquering that, it was really a precursor to what I do later in life, because now one of my very favorite things to do is be in front of a group of people. But it was a lesson that I will never forget in my career. And then after getting this marketing degree, I figured, oh, let me just do sales for just a little bit. But quite honestly, I never thought I'd ever have a sales career. And I remember my very first day of the job, they handed me the yellow pages, and they said, best of luck, and they walked away. And I hadn't a clue what to do. I didn't know about telephone systems, nor did I know about sales. But all I knew was there was a yellow pages sitting in front of me. I turned to the A's, and I started calling every single attorney in Philadelphia. 3 months into the job, I overhear my boss and the president of the company talking about firing me because I hadn't sold a single thing, and I hadn't a clue what I was doing. And I remember saying to myself at the time, you are not going to get fired from your first job out of school. You're smarter than these people. You're more educated. I'm going to figure this thing out. I started listening to cassettes, Tom Hopkins, Zig Ziglar, Brian Tracy. I started talking to successful salespeople. And finally, I figured out how to sell. And I was one of the top reps at the company. And again, that was another turning point, breaking through that plateau. It's really figuring out how to achieve that success when in the beginning of any new position, there's a lot of doubt, and it was all about the confidence. And then one last time within my career that I really had significant lessons that impacted my career greatly was going over to ADP, Automatic Data Processing. Now, I'm not sure how much all of you know about them. It's a phenomenal company. But the salespeople have weekly quotas, and every single week they've got to report in what they've sold. And basically, they had not only month to date, but quarter to date, year to date, and weekly quotas. And they were all stacked ranked accordingly. And my first year, I wasn't very successful. I was working very, very hard, but I couldn't figure out how to be successful. And my 1 year anniversary, I actually went into my boss's office and I quit. I got a job with Donnelly Directory and convinced myself, since I knew how to draw, I was going to design yellow page ads. And my boss at the time said, Lisa, you're making a big mistake. Donnelly Directory is not the place to go. I'm going to make you a deal. You stick around for 3 more months, and if you're not successful, I'll help you find a job. And then he proceeded to give me the best piece of advice, bar none, that I've ever gotten in my professional career, which was stop worrying so much about the results. Focus on doing the right number of the right activities right. And so those are 3 separate times that I can recall throughout my own career that I hit a point. And then I had to figure out how to get myself to the next level.
think it's fascinating, particularly in the last instance that you mentioned, that the importance of having somebody who was in a mentoring relationship to you, who provided the right kind of guidance to get you through a rough spot. And not every boss is like that.
No, not every boss is like that. And one thing I learned, especially in my management years over at ADP, when I had a small team and then was running an entire region. But what I learned is there's a huge difference between being a manager and being a leader. And if you treat people the way you want to be treated and not some as people that are working for you, and when they end up not only wanting to be successful for themselves, but wanting to be successful for their leader and their team, then it's a whole other story. And I often think back to what my boss did with me during those times, because especially in the sales arena where I play a good portion of our time, I find that a lot of business owners or leaders of sales teams sometimes don't give people enough runway. And I think at that point, maybe I was on the 5-yard line, just on the verge of being successful. Because what I left out was when he did that, I basically put pedal to the metal, focused on doing the right number of the right activities right, and finished in the top 8% of 2,000 salespeople that year. But I think about, what if my boss didn't do what he did when I was just on the verge of being successful? And I was talking to another business owner last week, and he has a new sales rep. She's been with him for around 5 months now, sold herself on how great she was going to do, and hasn't achieved that level of success. And he's questioning whether he should hang on to her. And my advice to him was, let's figure out what yard line she is on, and let's figure out what truly are, again, I'm going to mention those triage areas. What does she need to do in order to be successful? Because the worst thing that you could do is let somebody go when they are just on that verge. And it does take a while to build up your business, especially in the sales arena.
Yeah, so how do you know? So if you're the leader, how do you know whether someone is on the verge of being successful or just really is never going to cut it?
That is a fantastic question. And what I always looked at was three things: willing, committed, able. Well, first of all, if they're not willing to do what it takes to be successful, day in and day out, week in and week out, month in and month out, but more importantly, committed to doing it, then all bets were off. Because again, half of the battle is that attitude and motivation. Now, as far as the ability to piece, as long as they've got the key ingredients that I need from somebody to be successful in whatever role it might be, but if it's sales, I need good communication skills, I need self-starters, all those key ingredients that it takes to be successful in sales. So I basically look at willing, committed, able. And then in addition to that, as far as the ability, I am going to look at the triage areas. Because when you look at, and I'm going to talk about sales specifically for a moment, when you look at success in sales is based upon three key areas. I've already talked about 50% being attitude and motivation. 1/4 is filling that pipeline with good qualified prospects on a consistent basis. A lot of key words in that. And I know how someone's doing because I know what their pipeline levels look like. I know how well they are doing it, keeping their existing customers, as well as creating new opportunities within their customer base. And then we've got process. Once they've got a prospect or a suspect in front of them, what's the process that they take them through? And then I look at close ratio or win ratio. And I know if it's below 30% for business-to-business sales, then there's a problem with process. So what you really have to do, and I often thought about changing the name of my company to Sales Doctor, but it's always going 15 feet up, looking at what those key metrics are that apply to your success in your particular field or area, and then analyzing those key metrics to determine what are the key areas of opportunity? And again, if you could teach somebody or coach them how to do certain things within the process and they're willing and committed, then I'm keeping them any day of the week.
Right. So they have to be open to making some changes in behavior based on what you're teaching them.
If they see no gap between where they are and where they want to get to, there's nothing that they're going to do to close the gap. And it's very interesting. I always thought when I started as a brand new manager, I always thought that you could cookie cutter the people that report to you. And in fact, I wanted them all to be little Lisa Peskins. I wanted them to have my same work ethic and do things the way I did it. And what I came to realize is you can't necessarily cookie cutter those individuals that work with you, because everybody's got their own strengths and everybody's got their own areas of opportunity. And again, it's really figuring out how you could get your underperformers to perform. How do you get the average performers to be good? How to make the good performers be great? And the great performers, how do we get them to be superstars? And so here's a great example for you. I had a rep that worked with me, and he was 168% of quota, which is pretty much at superstar level. I knew he was missing one key ingredient. And I said to him, would you like to get to 200% of quota? Because I think I know how to get us there. And he said, I'm all in. And by the time we were done, he was at 200% of quota year to date. So it's not always working with the underperformers. It's really all about, as a leader, maximizing the potential and the performance of the individuals that work with you. So getting back to your question, yes, they have to understand that there's a gap and they've got to want to get there.
And what happens if you sense that it's not going to work?
Well, that's where you have to have those conversations. And I always looked at what I did is, as I just said, helping people and figuring out a way that I could help them be more successful. I had a wonderful mentor that said, when you go into business, don't go into business for making money. Go into business for figuring out how to help as many people as you possibly can. And it's the way I run my business every single day. And it really is all about, if somebody is not performing at the level that you need them to, well, I'm a big believer in giving feedback in a very productive way. And I once learned from an individual that I worked for who was a very straightforward individual. He said, I could either give it to you straight or I'm going to chop it up in applesauce. But either way, we've got to have the relationship where I've got to be able to tell you how I'm feeling, because my only role is to help you to be as successful as possible. And so as a leader, you have to have those tougher conversations. And I remember an individual that worked for me, and 3 years in a row, he finished 100% of quota. And you might say to me, what's the matter with 100% of quota? But his nickname happened to be Slick. And there's no reason why Slick should be 100% of quota. And I'd basically say to him, you're an A student getting C's. And he couldn't understand where I was coming from. But I said, you've got so much potential, yet you're not working to that level of potential. And every single year, he would basically start off the year at 100%. He would have some activity levels, get himself up to 107% of quota. And then all of a sudden, he stopped doing the activities. His pipeline would go down. His sales would go down. And he'd also all of a sudden be at 93% of quota. And then I'd be all over his case because 93 wasn't acceptable at ADP. Pedal to the metal. And again, got back up to 107% of quota. But landed at the end of the year for 3 years in a row at 100%.
That's remarkable.
And I said to him, if you had only kept that pedal steady and continued to prospect and do the right activity levels through the time period, you would be the superstar. And I'm at a wedding with him. This is back in the 90s. And I'm at a wedding with him in 1996. And he said, Peskin, I finally understand what you were trying to tell me all those years. And the guy is now making a wonderful living But that, again, was a true lesson, because there's a direct correlation between the activities that you do and the results that you get. And when we have fluctuations in our activities, there's going to be fluctuations in the results.
That's true. That's true.
And again, this individual, 3 years in a row, I'm trying to coach him to be better. But it wasn't until he had that aha moment. And it's all about creating those aha moments. Because you can't change 10 things about an individual. And I keep going back to my triage. But if you focus on three that could have a big impact on their performance. And if you don't mind, may I provide you an example?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So I had a sales manager call me up. He said, we bought a company. I've got a rep. She's been with the company 9 years and she cannot close the business. I want to send her to Philadelphia to your 2-day sales training class. My father always said to me, Lisa, you got to put your head on the pillow at the end of every day. So I said, why are you going to schlep her all the way here to Philadelphia? What if it's not a training issue? Let me just talk to her for 1 hour and let me figure this thing out. After an hour, it was really clear to me what was going on. One, she was presenting her solutions before she found out anything about the company. Two, she was not setting defined next steps. All next steps were loosey-goosey and people weren't getting back on the phone with her. And number three, everyone was saying that her solution was too expensive. She was basically selling databases of physicians to hospitals. She had an $18,000 solution and all the hospitals were saying it was way too much money. I taught her how to ask one additional question, which was, how many physician openings do you have for how many months? Because 1 month equates to $100,000 of lost revenue. So if she found a hospital that had two openings for 2 months, it was $400,000 of lost revenue. When she started presenting her $18,000 solution in the context of a $400,000 problem, it became a no-brainer. I started working with her in January of 2015. She finished number one in the quarter for the first two quarters of 2015, hit her annual quota in August of 2015. And when I spoke to her 2 months ago, last year she would have said $500,000 in sales. This year she's at $1 million of sales for three minor tweaks. And that's what it's all about, helping people talk about breaking through the plateau. She couldn't figure it out after 9 years and a fresh set of eyes, an objective point of view, three minor tweaks. And my greatest satisfaction is when she said to me, you changed my entire life.
So if you're in the position that she was in, how do you know, particularly if it's not your boss who's looking for the solution, let's say you're looking for the solution for yourself, how do you know even like where to start asking for help?
Well, I think it really comes down to the three quadrants, or actually three areas that I've discussed. And I actually have some tools that I've developed that have helped our clients figure out what areas that they need to improve upon. So again, it's really looking at yourself in an objective way. So for instance, if I'm talking about a sales representative, key metrics that I've got to understand, I must understand the breakdown between the business revenues. I need to know how much is repeat business, how much is additional business, how much is net new business. I need to fully understand where the net new business has come from, because that's going to help me determine where I should be focusing my time and efforts and where I've gotten the biggest bang for the buck. I must know average sale, and I must know largest sale as well as smallest sale. I must know close ratio, and I must understand sales cycle. So for a salesperson, those are key ingredients. For a sales manager, I'd be looking at the number of my sales associates that are over quota, how many months out of the year that they're hitting their numbers. I want to look at my turnover rate and what are the qualities of the people that have been most successful in working with me and my organization. So again, depending upon your individual role, I think that there's key metrics that go along with that role that help you really understand what you need to do to get to the next level.
But let's say you're somebody who is a salesperson like you just described, or perhaps a leader of a company or leader of a business unit, and perhaps you don't know what metrics are most important, or maybe you're looking at the wrong metrics. How do you even know who to go to, who to ask, what to ask? Where do you start?
I think I would start first internally to see if anybody within the organization has insight that they might be able to provide, whether it be people that are in a role within another region or people that have previously had that role. If I don't have resources within my own organization, then I'm going out to my network and I'm looking at anybody in my network that might provide me some insight. And lastly, I would look at professionals and consultants such as BDU or other organizations that are subject matter experts that could help give you an objective point of view as far as what you need to do to drive business. I was talking to a CEO of a rather large manufacturing company, and I was kind of reviewing the work that we've done together and how things have gone. And all I did with her is I worked with each of her individuals and I triaged them for her to give her an objective point of view of what I thought the individuals needed to work on. And then we basically did it for her team. And she only really has 3 salespeople. We put in place a structure, process, goals, accountability. And she says that in her CEO peer groups, she said this in and of itself has had such a major impact on her company as well as her revenues. So it's really all about just trying to figure out with each particular role, what are those areas that you could learn from other people. The last example that I might provide to you, I was at a networking function last Friday and I was talking to a financial advisor and he said he developed a peer group of other financial advisors that would be considered his competition. And he said he gets so much information and insight. So between your centers of influence, your own company, outside experts, you could also develop peer groups. And in fact, that's something, one of the initiatives that we are going to be doing at BDU, putting together a group conference call where people could talk about their struggles, their challenges, and ask questions about sales and sales management to really try to get that mind share going and having peers help peers.
Which means that you need to admit that there's a problem and make yourself vulnerable with others when you're doing some research and asking questions.
Absolutely. And another thing that I think is really important to bring up is in order to figure out how to truly get your direct reports to the next level, you really have to get a good understanding of what gets them out of bed every day. And I assumed incorrectly when I was a sales manager for my first couple years, I assumed that everybody wanted to be number one because all I really cared about at the end of the day was that someone was providing me a plaque at the end of the month saying I beat everybody because I'm a competitive type individual. And after collecting over 100 plaques over the years, that was really my motivation. But what I've come to realize is not everybody really cares about being number one. Some people, it's getting promoted to X. Some people, it's making X amount of money. And some people, especially some of the millennials that I've been working with recently, it's really quality of life. And so, again, we've been talking about closing that gap, but you really have to truly understand what gets somebody out of bed every day and what their motivators are. Because if that 168% of quota gentleman that I was talking to you about didn't have that desire to make as much money as possible and be number one, he might not have done what he needed to do to get to that 200% level.
Yeah, it's so true. It's so true. So Lisa, looking at other people for a minute, whom do you know personally who's been really remarkable at smashing plateaus?
One of the people that have had such a significant impact in my life, and he's actually my age, but he's truly a mentor, grew a company based upon his past success. He had a technology company that he grew from a small level to a rather large level where he got bought out. And then he took that methodology and came up with a company just basically helping other people with that same methodology to become successful, created peer groups, and really took his company really to a level. And he was the one that gave me that advice about don't go into business to make money, go into business to try to help as many people as you can. So he is somebody that influences the way I look at business and the way I truly look at life. Some other people, when you were asking me about those people that are remarkable, and just like Plateau, remarkable means so much to me in so many different ways. Because I think about one of my very best friends who passed away almost 3 years ago that had cancer and had so much adversity. And instead of complaining about his adversity, he called it an inconvenience. And his name happened to be Mark, and I called him remarkable. So now his wife, who happens to be one of my best friends, works as a social worker, helping those individuals that are experiencing ALS. So whether it be that person, that visionary that's able to take their company to a next level and help a lot of individuals, or those people that are in all of our lives that make an impact on others, I consider them both truly remarkable.
That's great. And Lisa, what can we look forward to in the near future from you?
Well, thank you for asking that. And as an entrepreneur, I'm always coming up with different ideas and ways that I could help more people. And one of the things that we're actively working on at BDU is a program for those individuals that want to get into sales but don't have any training or experience, so they could only truly get either straight commission or very low-level sales types positions. We're working on a program to help those individuals and at the same time help all the companies out there are struggling to find really great salespeople that would love to get somebody that's trained and experienced but can't necessarily find those great individuals. So look in the beginning of 2017 for a program that we're going to be rolling out that's going to be able to address those two marketplaces. In addition to that, I'm working on my book. And I always thought my book was going to be based upon our sales training manual, which could be entitled What I Wish They Told Me in 1986 When I Started in Sales. But now what I realize my book is all about, I'm a storyteller. And I think that's the way with your clients, you create aha moments. And aha moments affect results. So my book is a collection of stories of either the sale you're most proud of, the sale you learned the most from, or the funniest sale, because I like humor. And if any of the listeners out there have one of those stories that they'd either like to get videotaped, audiotaped, or just within the book, I'm collecting those stories right now. And then the last thing that I'm excited about for 2017 is a program that is for individuals that really have questions about how to fill their pipeline, how to increase their close ratios, how to be more successful in sales or sales management. We're going to offer them through a subscription program the ability to talk to peers on a weekly basis, as well as ourselves, in helping them to really truly break that plateau.
That's great. How can listeners get in touch with you and follow you?
Well, certainly, please link into me, and that's very easy to do. But also, our website is www.businessdevelopmentuniversity.com. That's businessdevelopmentuniversity.com. It's a little long, but it's easy to spell.
Sounds great. Well, Lisa, thanks so much for joining us today on Smashing the Plateau. It's been a fascinating discussion about understanding what your plateau is and being committed to finding a way to smash. It's been really, really a rewarding discussion. My guest today has been Lisa Peskin, CEO and founder of Business Development University. Thanks again, Lisa, for joining us.
Thanks so much for the opportunity.
Thank you for listening to Smashing the Plateau, the podcast produced by Tend Strategic Partners. I hope you enjoyed our discussion. Have you ever hit a plateau in your own life or career? If so, let's talk. It would be my pleasure to take you through one of our free half-hour discovery sessions, where we'll get to the bottom of what might be keeping you stuck and how to move things forward. Just give me a call at 212-731-0770. That's 212-731-0770. You never know what you might find out.